Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. Tonight in Denver. If you don't live in Denver, too bad for you. Tonight, May 9th, 2014, Dr. Jerry Bergman, one of my favorite creation authors. In fact, I assert the most prolific creation author in the world. Now, is that right or not? I have to find out. Dr. Jerry Bergman is speaking this evening at the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship. If you live in the Denver area, it's what, at Wadsworth and 21st? In fact, after this month, we're no longer meeting at that location, but at Bethlehem Lutheran Church. So we're going to have a great time at 7 o'clock. You got to be there. His topic is going to be Darwinism, the Universal Asset. Now, Dr. Bergman has published over 900 articles and papers, 35 books. I've been reading his writings for 30 years. This is part of how I grew up as a creationist, to learn the ins and outs of the battle. But one of his most significant books is Hitler in the Nazi Darwinian Worldview.
Right.
Dr. Jerry Bergman, thank you so much for being in studio here at Bob Enyart Live.
It's great to be here.
Well, I would love to talk with you about the topic tonight of the Universal Asset, but if we do that, people might not come out.
We can give some hints, though, what I'll be talking
about. Well, yeah, why don't we do that? And then I'd love to talk about your book on Hitler and the Nazis' Darwinian Worldview.
Okay, my focus for not only this book, but several other books, is basically that Darwinian beliefs and ideology has had a profound influence in our history. One of the best examples is there were 77 million Christian martyrs from the time of Christ till a couple of years ago, 77 million. But in the last century, the Darwinian century, alone, there was 45.5 million Christian martyrs. So we can see the extent of killing Christians. Mm-hmm. Now, these were done by a group of professors at Harvard and other universities. The essential reality is that the number of Christians murdered because of their beliefs has just blossomed since around 1900.
Wow.
Another example is that World War I was seven times greater than all 602 wars in history put together, seven times greater. World War II was four times greater than World War I. Mm. Therefore, World War II was 28 times greater than all wars in history put together. So why do we have such an incredible uptick in the amount of casualties?
The slaughter of people by the millions.
By the millions. So why?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've been doing research on this now for about 30 years, and clearly Darwinist beliefs, Darwinian ideas, evolution, was a major factor in the horrors that we experienced in the last century. And when you read about case after case and situation after situation, it's just mind-boggling the destruction that occurred as a result of this idea.
Mm. You've been teaching for about 30 years at Northwest State College in Ohio. Dr. Bergman, I know you specialize in teaching biology, anatomy. You've done geology and astronomy, right? And along with all your publications, you've done a lot of research. But I know that atheists and evolutionists who are listening to us, they get so angry when anyone mentions Adolf Hitler or the Nazis and Charles Darwin in the same breath. They get very angry.
Yeah, they might, but this is so well documented. And
yeah,
the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. has published a book a few years ago, which...
And by the way, we've been there a number of times, and Yad Vashem in Jerusalem and in Manhattan. So, yeah, go ahead.
It's well documented. And this book called Nazism and Medicine does an excellent job documenting the close relationship between Darwinism and the Holocaust, not only of the Jews, but also of other, quote,
yeah,
inferior races. And so it's well documented. And for people to deny this is like, they might as well deny the Holocaust. That's probably more academic than to deny, indeed, the connection between Darwinism.
When an evolutionist says to me that is completely false, Charles Darwin, Darwinism had nothing to do with motivating the Nazis, I've said to them, well, is it relevant what the Nazis said? Like, is that relevant at all to you? And you know what? It's not relevant at all to them. If the Nazis say we're doing this to implement a master race, survival of the fittest, natural selection, we're doing this, that's completely irrelevant to the typical atheist or evolutionist that I speak with.
Yeah, they're ignoring reality because it's so well documented, not only with Hitler, but also with communism, with Marx, with Lenin and Stalin, etc., and Mao even, and other infamous communist leaders. So to deny that, they're just not looking at reality. Denial of reality is a problem. That's something that a psychiatrist should deal with.
Yeah, right. You point out in your book that just talk to pretty much any high school student, and they know that one of Hitler's primary goals was to produce a superior race based on survival of the fittest and advancing the evolutionary advancement of the human race.
Right.
And that included getting rid of inferior species.
Right.
So pretty much everybody knows, at least at that level, and that's a pretty high level of what the Nazis were all about. That sounds very Darwinian.
Yeah, it does. Let me read you one quote briefly. Quote, centerpiece of Hitler's speeches was the call for racial purity, an idea that was to become the driving force of Mengele's existence and also Nazism's existence. The future dictator beguiled his audiences with his dream, a country populated by blonde, blue-eyed supermen and superwomen, a vision that would be achieved through the elimination of all inferior races, not just the Jews, but also of Slavic peoples, of Russian people, of gypsies, and many, many other groups. Mm. Ironically, also, he had some strong negative things to say about the Orientals, the Japanese, the Chinese, and so on. Which
it's pretty much anybody who's not like me is inferior.
Anyone who's not
blonde. And Charles Darwin had the same thing in his book, Descent of Man.
Right, exactly.
Negroes and Aborigines and so on.
Yeah. So if you just take his words at face value, Darwin's words, you can see that it's not a stretch for Germany to apply this to society.
Darwin even mentioned exterminating the inferior races. So you mention a Yale University professor, Fritz Riedlich, and he was asked, what was the centerpiece of Hitler's worldview? Mm-hmm. And do you recall his answer? You wrote this a while back.
Darwinism, yeah.
Yeah, social Darwinism and anti-Semitism. He sort of gave two answers.
Yeah.
But the anti-Semitism flowed directly from the social Darwinism.
Exactly.
You point out that there was plenty of racism before Charles Darwin.
Oh, yeah, throughout history.
But something changed because we don't really need an excuse to hate our neighbor. That goes way back to Cain and Abel. But if you give people an excuse to hate their neighbor, they're going to jump on it. They're going to exploit it. So Darwin took justifications like revenge, like Christians in Europe hated the Jews because they said they killed Jesus. Mm-hmm. When really the Roman Empire are the ones that did it. But they said the Jews killed Jesus. Vengeance was a motive. Mm-hmm. Or just envy. They had more money than we do. But what Darwin did is he gave it a scientific veneer, a justification. I could be a professor at a university and show that Jews are inferior based on biology. Mm-hmm. And that caused the whole culture to become obsessed with an open hatred.
That's exactly what happened.
So then you quote in your book, you begin, because again, the atheist or the evolutionist who's listening right now, who is thinking there's no way Charles Darwin ever said anything remotely racist or genocidal. So you begin by quoting his work, and it's rather chilling to read what Darwin wrote.
Very much so.
And not necessarily an Origin of Species, because in that book, he pretty much avoided talking about human beings.
Yeah, he didn't talk about humans at all in that book. That's true.
But Descent of Man, that was the whole book.
Right.
And it's been described as a racist creed.
From cover to cover, right.
And so I'd like to quote Charles Darwin through your book, Hitler and the Nazi Darwinian Worldview. So he writes this, that if we apply his theory, his natural selection, survival of the fittest, quote, the civilized races of man will almost certainly exterminate the savage races. Mm-hmm. And so by the civilized races, he means himself.
Right.
Now, you said he was also against Orientals. Hitler was.
Hitler was very against.
That's right. I don't recall Darwin writing about Orientals.
Which is surprising in that Nazi Germany, of course, was working with Japanese and fighting World War II.
Right.
And
politics makes for strange bedfellows.
It certainly does.
Yeah. So Charles Darwin's full quote, and the edition of The Descent of Man that you quote from, it's on page 201. Which edition?
1871. I always use the first edition because, number one, there's a concordance to several of his books, including The Origin of Species and the 1859 book, and, of course, his 1871 book on man, The Descent of Man. So it's an easy way of finding things because I have a concordance to every word in both of those books.
You quote Charles Darwin when he asks whether man has given rise to races that must be classified as doubtful species. That word doubtful. But then it's later when he sort of explains that the civilized races of man will almost certainly exterminate the savage races. And so by that, he meant white Europeans like him would almost certainly. And I think elsewhere he makes that even more.
Yeah, he does.
Certain.
In a number of letters that he wrote, he made that statement much more definite.
So when the Germans saw the Jews as inferior, and I know so many of Darwin's supporters, including the Scopes Monkey Trial, that Hunter's civic biology put Jews and blacks and some other native people groups just above the apes.
Yeah.
And that's what the creationists were fighting against, Hunter's biology, civic biology. And so the ACLU and the culture at large and the government overwhelmingly supported the use of this overtly racist book is a high school textbook.
They did. And that today is embarrassing, or should be, to the evolutionist.
It should be, but it's not. They have a zero concession policy. Do you hear them conceding points along the way, Jerry? Do you?
Well, you get some individual evolutionists who are honest. Stephen Jay Gould is well known for
Gould. Well, honest that there's no fossil intermediaries, but that's because he had an alternative theory.
Yeah.
If he didn't, he wouldn't have been honest. That's my take on
it. But he did a pretty good job. Even the Scopes Monkey Trial in 1925, he did an excellent job showing that really the concern was racism.
Oh, thank you. I did not know that.
Yeah, he does.
You know, there's a movie made, a new movie on the Scopes Trial, Alleged.
Right.
Film writer, producer, Fred Foote. Have you seen Alleged?
I have, yes.
What a neat movie. We interviewed Fred.
It finally brings out the importance of racism in the Scopes Trial.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a great movie. Alleged. Highly recommend it. So in your book, then, you get to The Descent of Man. And I think you show rather forcefully that Darwin, even for his day, which there was tremendous racism in his day, even slavery.
Yeah.
But Darwin was excessively racist.
And that is ironic because one of his best friends, was a black who was a taxidermist, and Darwin took lessons under this man and said he respected this man a great deal, learned a great deal about taxidermy from him. So he had some firsthand experiences which you would think would temper his feelings. In fact, he knew a number of black individuals that he had good relationships with. So how in the world could he say these things in his books when his experiences, as far as I know,
should have informed him otherwise?
Totally positive.
But you know what? Hatred, sin, has a way of causing people to think with a broken mind.
That's true.
And I'll give you an example from your book about Charles Darwin. Now, is it wrong to say Darwin's theory says that species could change? Is that wrong to say that? That Darwin's theory says species could change.
No, that's
central to his whole theory, right? But what did he say about blacks or minorities in general? He argued that they couldn't change, that they wouldn't change. Isn't that an irony, a fundamental contradiction of his entire worldview? And I think the only reason he would contradict Darwinism was to cling to his sin, to cling to his hatred, his racism.
Yeah.
Do you remember what he said about, he compared the gap between Negroes and the gorilla, and he was talking about the distance between, like, white Europeans and animals in general, and he was saying how the more advanced we get, that gap widens.
Right.
And then he made a derogatory statement implying that the Negro and the gorilla are not as far apart as would be Europeans and animals.
Right.
I think the case is pretty open and shut that Charles Darwin was an aggressive racist.
Yeah, I think that's pretty clear. Although he wouldn't, if pressed, I think he would say he's not. But on the other hand, well, his words speak very, very loudly as to what he believed.
Yeah, and the next time we'll hear from him will be on Judgment Day, and God will give an objective account of his influence on the world. So, Dr. Jerry Bergman, then you fast forward to Germany and a guy named Ernest Haeckel. And so many others. Could you tell us about the influence of not only Darwin, but his cousin Francis Galton and the eugenics movement? And so what was happening in Germany as the National Socialist movement was still nascent?
Okay, well, Darwin, of course, couldn't read German. His wife could, but he couldn't read German. And so, and of course, many people in Germany couldn't read English. Hitler, as far as we know, couldn't read English. In fact, the first language The Origin of Species was translated into was in German. And the man who translated it, and there were several involved, but the man who translated it took a little bit of liberty with making the translation, making it more racist than it even was. And then in Germany, of course, Ernst Haeckel was one of Darwin's major followers. In fact, Ernst Haeckel's books sold more than many of Charles Darwin's books, which surprised me. And his books sold so well that you can buy them now at used bookstores for almost nothing. And the English translations. So he had a tremendous amount of influence. So it wasn't just Darwin's influence, but Darwin's disciples. In fact, the original title I had for this book, instead of Hitler and the Nazi Darwinian Worldview, was Darwin's 12 Disciples, because he had 12 major disciples that were very important, Hitler did, in producing the Holocaust as well as the Nazi movement and what they did. But my publisher didn't like that. They thought, no, that's too much disciples. We think of the 12 disciples of Jesus. Didn't want to associate that.
But. You know, it is a pretty good sign as an author to find your book for 5 cents at a Goodwill somewhere. That's a good sign. I don't know if you've ever noticed this in your research, but regarding this atheist and fraud perpetrator, Ernst Haeckel, because he's the one who created these fabricated drawings of fetuses to show that a human fetus looks like a fish and so on. But here I got a clipping out of the New York Times from March 9th, 1907, and the Kaiser honored Haeckel, and he bestowed upon him the title of Excellency on this famous atheist, and he was given an award for ethics, an ethical award, and he's this famous fraud.
That surprises me. And not only his drawings were fraudulent, but other of his works were his drawings were. And he was, by the way, an incredibly good artist. In fact, it's said that if he wasn't a Darwinist and followed Darwin, that he probably would have become well known as an artist, because he was a very, very good artist, and many of his books were illustrated with his drawings. Today's drawings are worth a fortune. Not quite the value of Renoir or you know, some Picasso and so on, but certainly his drawings were very meticulously and very well done. And so there's really no excuse for his fraudulent drawing.
Oh, good point, because he was skilled at this. Yeah, he intentionally made a baby look like a fish so Margaret Sanger's of the world could come along and say it's okay to kill them because we're just killing these fish. Non-human animals, these fish.
Not a human, it's a fish.
By the way, it was Emperor William who bestowed the honor. And here's a, I zoomed into the New York Times from 1907. On Professor Ernst Haeckel, the celebrated Darwinian and founder of the Association for the Propagation of Ethical Atheism. Is that too much or what? He's known in history as a fraud. And of course, his use of Darwinism fed into the eugenics that led to the Holocaust.
Right.
So Charles Darwin wrote about exterminating these inferior races. And these thinkers in Europe, they set about figuring out how to move in that direction.
Yeah. And I should mention the German eugenicists relied heavily upon American eugenicists. In fact, so heavily that at least one I know of was given an honorary doctorate at University of Heidelberg in honor of the work that he did in eugenics. So in fact, it's said that Hitler's program was based almost totally upon the American eugenicists. So we can't claim ourselves to be totally innocent in
not
this
at
area.
All. America's pretty horrific. Over at AmericanRightToLife.org, they do a good job of documenting that. We had forced sterilization. We sterilized, I forget the number, about maybe 40,000 Americans.
Or more.
Or more. And the U.S. Supreme Court upheld that to pretty late in our history, real horrific eugenics movement led by Margaret Sanger, Planned Parenthood, and so on. How about the Nazis, the officials in Nazi Germany? Nazi just means National Socialist.
Yeah, National Socialist Workers' Party.
Right. And so officials who would acknowledge that they were implementing a Darwinian worldview. When you researched your book, was that difficult to establish?
Oh, there is enormous amount of material on this. Now, you go to a used bookstore and you find maybe 10 books about World War I, maybe 10 books about the Civil War, and you find shelves of books about World War II and the Nazism. Mm. Now, most of these cover primarily the war and the battles and politics and so on, but most at least mention the central role that evolution played in the Nazi movement. And some, of course, in more detail, but by and large, it's not hidden, this stuff in my book. It's not a secret. It's not a new discovery. It's well documented. But the advantage, what I did is I tried to go through in my own library. I have several hundred books on Nazism and World War II. And I went through these basically and tried to call out material which would deal with my thesis, which was looking at the influence of Darwin and Darwinism in the Nazi movement. In fact, it's pretty clear to me, although when you debate history, of course, there's always a problem, but it's pretty clear to me that but for Darwinism, we wouldn't have had a World War II. If we would have had a World War II, it would have turned out very different. And I'll give you an example. When the German army went into Ukraine, which is in the news now, they were celebrated by the Ukrainian people. They felt were better off being ruled by Hitler. Now, this is before, of course, what he did was well known. Mm-hmm. We're better off being ruled by Hitler than the Russians. As the soldiers paraded through the streets, they put flowers in their guns and so on. So the Ukrainians welcomed Hitler's army and becoming part of Germany. But what happened, of course, was that then when the German Nazis applied racism and began killing the Ukrainians, then they turned very quickly against the Nazis and they moved, of course, to defend the Soviet Union at that time. So it's a very interesting history that many welcome, by the way, not only Ukraine, but also Austria and Hungary and several other countries welcome the Nazi takeover, partially because at that time, about 1938, 1939, the German economy was doing incredibly well. And there was a lot of concern in other countries that indeed, if we had a Nazi-like government, we would then have an incredibly good economy. And so many were not opposed to the Nazi movement at first. And when they began to apply their racism ideas, then, of course, it all changed drastically, as you know.
We had a dear friend who passed away recently, Martin Small. He survived one of the most horrific concentration camps and Mauthausen. And he wrote about his neighbor, the pastor of a Greek Orthodox church, and his wife and their two kids. When the Nazis came into their Polish shtetl, their village, the chief of police, who was Polish, got the pastor, his wife, and the kids, lined them up against the whitewashed wall in front of the church, right across from Martin's home, and they shot each one of them in the head. That killed them.
Yeah.
So I've heard you mention before that they also went after Christians, especially Christian leaders. They did that in the Soviet Union, too.
Right.
Which is another Darwinist regime.
Regime, yeah, that's true. And by the way, now what do we see going on in Europe? Germany basically rules Europe. The economy is stronger than any other economy in Europe. And basically, they, because of their economic dominance, have an enormous dominance in the European community now. So in many ways, Hitler's goal of ruling Europe has come true. And they, of course, don't completely run Europe as Hitler wanted to.
Right,
but on
right.
the other hand...
Well, their ideology, as far as a godless, materialistic, socialist, Darwinian worldview, that rules Europe and much of the world.
Right.
With an iron fist.
Right.
So, yeah, the Nazis maybe had more of a victory, tragically, than I've ever realized till this very show.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's rather horrific. Jerry, your book is a tremendous read. When we got it to prepare for this program, one of my associate producers, Doug McBurney, grabbed it and would not let anyone touch it till he finished it. And so I've just been going through it. It's extremely well written. I'm glad to hear it. It's one of your better sellers. Just vital for understanding the big issues involved in one of the greatest horrors of human history.
Yeah, and I've gotten very, very good feedback, even from critics that are not necessarily favorable toward my work, had to admit that, yeah, you've done a good job in this book, and it's very, very helpful. In fact, the Holocaust Museum in Washington was one of the first places that bought a copy, and I noticed, because on WorldCat, which is a website which lists all the books in the major libraries in the world, I noticed after the Holocaust Museum bought a copy, Harvard bought one, University of Michigan bought one, Princeton got one, and so it's spread throughout many of the major universities. Yeah. And I have a feeling that the Holocaust Museum's endorsement of the book was important in all those other schools.
Well, and the Darwinists who have written articles saying that there's no connection between Darwinism and the Nazi worldview, for one, I always chuckle because it's like, well, can't you ask the Nazis? Because they sure say it's what was motivating them.
Yeah, they made it very clear.
And so how do you exclude them from your analysis of what motivated them? If you can't ask them, then pretty much you can say whatever you want.
Yeah. People believe what they want to believe to some degree. And they say, don't bother me with the facts.
Right. So we need to be humble before the truth. Ultimately, Jesus Christ said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. And if we're going to resist him, we'll resist the truth in any fashion, whatever's convenient. Dr. Jerry Bergman, thank you. What an honor to have you in the studio.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And looking forward to tonight, 7 o'clock, Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship. Check out denvercreation.com on the web. Get the address. We'll see you there. You're going to go, Jerry? Be there?
Oh, I have to be there.
God bless you guys.